Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
My first intention was to, I'll just put on a free seminar in the evening for 2 hours. I'll invite a bunch of people. I'll teach them a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end, I'll make them an offer to come into my global coaching and mentoring program. So I did that. I was expecting a couple of hundred people to turn up at the hotel. And I had one person show up. One person. So I did my thing. I was at my best. And this one person convinced me to take my stuff online versus offline. And it was that moment, if a whole bunch of people had showed up at that seminar, I wouldn't have the massive business that I have today.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying, because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gleckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up, but first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die. Carl Allen starts this in a very deficit position. He's obviously British. And he was complaining that the time change was a bit of a drag. And he said that by the end of March, it'll all be cleared up. And I reminded him that by the end of March, everything will be cleared up relative to Brexit. And he is the founder and CEO of Ninja Acquisitions, a company that serves the mergers, acquisitions, and capital fundraising goals of small to medium businesses. We will define small to medium business because you and I may not have the same definition. He is an entrepreneur. He is an investor. He is a corporate deal maker. Carl has analyzed thousands of businesses, big and small, in 17 different countries across nearly every business sector. Carl has a solid reputation as an investor, corporate deal maker, having worked for Bank of America, Hewlett-Packard, Forrester, and Gartner. So let's welcome to the Sell or Die program the great Carl Allen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. What a great introduction.
Well, I'm a reader, and you actually have a good enough background to make it a cool introduction.
Thank you.
Who's behind you?
Who's behind me?
Yeah, what's all that?
So I have three big passions in life. One is football or soccer, as I think you call it.
Yeah, I know. Who do you support?
So my local team is Burnley, which is an English Premier League team. They've been my team since I was born. But my favorite soccer player on the planet is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Of course.
So I met him. I have his signed shirt. I have an artist portrait of him. My other big passion is boxing. And my big hero is Joe Calzaghe, who's behind me. He gave me his shorts when he won the world middleweight championship many years ago.
Cool.
And then my third big hero is Tony Robbins, who taught me everything I know about mindset and peak performance, not just for me, but what I translate into my businesses. So that's my kind of my pleasure wall, as I would call it.
Gotcha. Are you familiar with the work of Jim Rohn?
Yes, I am. Yeah. So Jim Rohn was the original teacher of Tony, I believe. Right. I think Tony's first job was selling Jim Rohn seminars, or so he told me.
That is correct. I can take it just a little bit deeper. I attended many Jim Rohn weekend seminars where I was thigh to thigh with the great Darren Hardy. We were sitting in the front row and we took notes. I think there were six Jim Rohn weekends. And we're laughing and all that, la-di-da. And one day I saw a sign at the Hotel Kempinski in Dallas that said Jim Rohn seminar today. And I thought, oh, cool, I'll go. So I go and there's like 35 people in the room. It was for Herbalife. And the seminar's over. And Jim and I had a relationship. So I sat in the back until his talk was over. And I said, how do you do this? How do you have 3,000 people at a Jim Rohn weekend. Now there's 35 people in the room. How do you get the same energy level? And he said, this is the first time I ever saw him out of Jim Rohn character, by the way. He said, Jeffrey, you never know who's in the audience. You never know who you're going to impact for life. He said, one time I gave a seminar for 19 people and one of them was Anthony Robbins.
Yeah.
And and I've carried that message with me for the last almost 20 years, because that's what makes me certain that I'm going to deliver the best I can, regardless of who is in the audience or what time of the day or night it is. It's a matter of being your best all the time.
So I have such a great resonance with that story, Jeffrey, and something very, very similar to me happened about 3 years ago when I made the decision to not only do deals, which I still do every day, but to coach and mentor entrepreneurs all over the world. My first foray into that, this is before I ever knew anything about the online space or digital marketing or copy or all of that stuff. My first intention was to, I'll just put on a free seminar in the evening for 2 hours. I'll invite a bunch of people. I'll teach them a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end, I'll make them an offer to come into my global coaching and mentoring program. So I did that. I was expecting a couple of hundred people to turn up at the hotel, and I had one person show up. One person. So I did my thing. I was at my best. And this one person convinced me to take my stuff online versus offline. And it was that moment. If a whole bunch of people had showed up at that seminar, I wouldn't have the massive business that I have today with the thousands of entrepreneurs all over the world that I'm serving. So I really resonate with that story, and because I have massive kind of personal experience of it.
It's kind of a drag when one guy shows up.
It is, but you know, like 99 out of 100 people would have just kind of pulled the plug and gone home.
Not
me. I prepped, I'd rehearsed, and I delivered that content to him. And he was like, man, this is amazing. I think you should take this online. And he helped me build out the whole program. So it was great.
That's totally cool. So how did you decide that you were going to be the merger and acquisition king of the 21st century?
Wow, that's a great accolade. Thank you for that, Jeffrey.
Hey, if you work for Bank of America and Forrester and Gartner, something's going right. And when you do corporate acquisitions, those are the most tricky, because if you do the wrong one, you have a bunch of shareholders you got to...
Absolutely. I know.
Ask Bank of America about Countrywide Mortgage.
Yeah. So what's really interesting is I've had a very kind of, I had a fantastic kind of background the last 26 years of buying and selling businesses. The massive change for me happened 11 years ago on the 1st of February, 2008. So as you'd alluded to, I went into the corporate M&A world. I left university. My first degree actually was in structural engineering. And I decided to go into investment banking because it paid a lot more money. So I did that. I ended up in mergers and acquisitions. I worked for BOA. I was doing deals with Boeing and GE and IBM and Microsoft and all those guys. And then ended up, you know, going to business school and working for a couple of other businesses. And my big last job was at HP. So when I was at HP, I was flying all over the world doing deals, and I was in Moscow working on a big deal, and I was in the boardroom of this office in Moscow, and I got the dreaded phone call from my wife, who was 36 weeks pregnant, that she was going into labor with our son, who's now 11, Joshua, and I had to get myself back to the UK, you know, pretty quickly. And it's not like flying from Philadelphia to, you know, Boston, you know, Moscow to the UK. It's a long way. So anyway, I get back with 5 minutes to spare. I go into the hospital, little guy pops out, and I just thought, you know, I just can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Something triggered in my head. I just didn't want to work for other people and be kind of, you know, restricted to what I could do with my family. So I quit, and I actually retired. I was 37 at the time. And after about 3 weeks, I was freaking out, didn't know what to do. My brain was kind of turning to mush. And I thought to myself, I have one big problem, which is I only have one skill set. And my skill set, which is a good skill set to have, was I know how to buy and sell businesses. But most of my deals to date had been mega deals, you know, billion-dollar deals, $100 million deals. I'd never done a lot of kind of small deals. So I kind of learned that process, and I started buying and selling my own businesses, which I still do. And the big difference for me was on a small deal, which is what I'm doing every day now and my thousands of people that I work with, is those deals are 90% psychology and 10% numbers. When you're working on a billion-dollar deal, it's the other way around.
90% numbers. Yeah.
The psychology is much less. So I started doing a whole bunch of different deals. I buy, grow, and sell them. I own 17 different businesses all over the world. I don't run any of them. I have general managers that do that daily kind of tactical work for me. And then about 2.5 years ago, I was just inundated with people saying, hey, you know, you need to teach this stuff. You have a skill set. You have a formula. You have a proprietary system that you've built. You need to share it with the world. And initially, I wanted to keep it to myself. It was my IP. But then I realized that it would be a source of great deal flow for me to put this system into the hands of really kind of hungry entrepreneurs, have them do their own deals, but then also bring deals to me that they don't want to do. So I created my system. And as I mentioned before, my original plan was to do that through live webinars. Didn't work. One guy showed up. Ian showed up and convinced me to turn this into an online program. So anybody, anywhere, you know, could go through and do this. They don't have to travel and get on a plane and come and see me. So that's what I did. And it's been a fantastic journey so far.
Hey, everybody, this is Gina Tremarco
and Rachel Tipton,
and we are
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the new podcast that does what?
Makes sales sexy again.
What's this podcast about, Rachel?
It's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks, and it's filled with laughter, random chatter, practical advice, and some serious stuff.
It's not just for women, though, right?
No, it's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks for men and for women.
Listen to us on the Sell or Die Network,
womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, and anywhere that you can find podcasts. And
be sure to subscribe, comment, share our podcast, and give us a review. Tune in and listen to
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again.
You've been warned.
So that's a great question. And I'm going to talk from kind of personal experience. Obviously, I went through the HP Compaq merger, which is one of the biggest failed mergers in corporate America, probably mm-hmm. worse than AOL Time Warner. But one of the stories was from one of my own personal deals. So it's actually the largest LBO leverage buyout. That's the type of deal that I do. The largest deal I ever did personally was back in 2012. I acquired an $18 million subsidiary from a large UK corporate entity, massive $9 billion organization. And we owned that business, my business partner and I, for about 3 years. We got on great with that business. You know, we made over $1 million each from being the owners of that business. But one of the challenges we had was the company we bought it from, they were 40% of our revenues, but 90% of our profits. And we just naturally assumed that that relationship would last forever. We had a 5-year contract with them. We were about halfway through it. And then unfortunately, that company got into some financial trouble. They called in very high priced consultants who took a whack at the income statement and looked at all of their discretionary spend. And I'll never forget the phone call. I was sat in my office in the UK in this business. So I was the CFO of this business. My business partner was the CEO. And I got a phone call from the previous owner, the corporate, and it was the financial controller. He said, "Hey, Carl, I've got some good news and some bad news." He said, "The good news is that the $4 million you already owe me," because we'd bought this business on primarily a seller financing deal, so we were paying for the business over time.
Yeah, in America, it's called bootstrap.
Yeah, so that's how we were doing the deal. And he called me up and he said, "Hey, the $4 million you owe me," we'd already paid $1 million. He said, "I don't need that money anymore. You can keep it." I said, "Well, thank you very much. That's great, Peter. Much appreciated." He said, "The bad news is that the 5-year supply contract you signed when you bought the business from me, I'm ripping it up. So, you know, that's it." So overnight, our business had gone from being worth about $25 million to being worth a dollar. And we actually gave the business away for a dollar to a large Hong Kong conglomerate. And we exited that deal. So very valuable lesson learned on that deal. And my attitude in life, Jeffrey, is, you know, problems are gifts that make you grow. And as long as you learn something from whatever happens to you, it can always be a positive thing. We were just too highly focused on one particular customer, the big proverbial gravy train, and we'd not done enough to diversify and de-risk that business away from that one major customer. So that was a very valuable lesson that I learned. And that's actually now one of my major filters that I apply for the hundreds of deals that I look at on a weekly basis.
Diehards, we call our listeners diehards. I want you to take this to heart. Like Carl, my dad was in the manufacturing business. We manufactured kitchen cabinets and countertops. And Sears wanted to place a big order with us. And my father said, "No." I said, "Pop, what are you doing?" He said, "When Sears does business with you, they try to dominate you, demand a lower price, demand no profit from you, and ultimately put you out of business or buy you for a dollar." And that happens a lot. You know, you can look at it now with the new Sears, Walmart, or the new Sears, Amazon. Those will be the two remaining large companies in this country, because about 1,000 of them a year go out of business as a result of those two people. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. There's a reason that statement has been around for about 500 years, and it's because it's true. So Carl has this great deal with this great company, and 90% of his business is with that company, and they pulled the plug, and now he either had to go sell something or walk away. And he chose walk away, probably a good move, because somebody else could pick up the pieces better than he could. And, you know, he made a decision. The hard part of business is knowing when to cut bait. Anyway, so let's talk more about what you do and how do you do it. Should somebody who's listening right now consider buying a business instead of trying to build one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Starting a brand new business is the riskiest, most painful thing, you know, one can do. I'll tell you why. So you've heard of Michael Gerber, who's the author of The E-Myth, probably the best business book that I've ever read. So this is his data. 96% of startups fail inside of the first 10 years. 50% fail inside of the first 12 months. And the reason, the primary reason that startups fail is because when you start a brand new company, you have no cash, no credit, no customers, no employees, no products or services, no
But you
premises.
Have an idea, and your mom said it was a good idea, right?
No reputation, you just have an idea. And it's very hard to build a business just off an idea without all of those different things. If you have a truckload of capital, then you can, you know, you can go through and you can survive in some cases. And you know, for me, my kind of sensible idea is don't start a business, go and buy a business that somebody else has built and no longer wants anymore. And if you look at the statistics, just in the United States, in 2018, 7 million Americans, this is according to Forbes, 7 million Americans started a brand new business in 2018. Wow. 3.5 million of them will fail by the end of this year. Yet there's over 2.4 million small businesses. And for me, a small business is $1 to $10 million in revenues or less than 50 employees. There's over 2.4 small businesses for sale in the United States today, and only one in 13 are actually going to sell in the next 12 months. So rather than risk your health, your money, your retirement, whatever it is, your marriage, starting a new company that's you've got a 96% failure rate, go and buy a business that somebody's built and doesn't want anymore. And one of my analogies for that is Tesla. So in the UK, we're a little bit antiquated. We're not as technologically advanced as America. And Tesla.
Thank you
just
for admitting that, by the way.
No, it's fine. So Tesla's
just
in
the fucking Stone Age. Let's face it. You got fences that have rocks around it for borders, and you play golf, and there's no fairways. Come on.
Absolutely. So Tesla arrived in the UK late last year, and I thought that's pretty cool. So I went and I ordered a Tesla. So if I wanted a Tesla, I could have A, gone and bought the wheels, the screen, the aluminium, the battery, the big screen that sits in the middle, all the electrics, and I could have assembled all this stuff on my driveway and figured out, you know, how do I build it? Or did I go to Tesla and did I buy a Tesla that they built and then financed it through Tesla? That's what I did. So my analogy is do that in a business rather than building one from scratch. Because it, you know, everyone gets kind of hung up on, you know, I want to innovate. I want to do something really cool. I want to do something really unique that no one's ever seen before. And that's great. I'm not here to crush entrepreneurial spirit, but go do that inside of a business that's that you can buy that's kind of related to what that new innovation is. Because guess what? There'll be people in that business that can help you do it. You'll still have cash flow from that business while you're innovating. And then once you've built something new, you've already got a customer base that's probably going to buy it. And they can even help you design it. So
should I buy a franchise that they're guaranteeing me a startup thing and they're going to help me find it and finance it? Or should I buy a business that's existing and running?
Yeah, go buy a business. I'm not a fan of buying franchises for a couple of reasons. Number one, depends on what the franchise is, of course. But, you know, if you went to Subway and you drop $70,000 to acquire a Subway franchising, and maybe you can finance some of that, you've got to have at least $150,000 of working capital, you know, to make that work. Mm-hmm. And there's loads of restrictions with franchises, you know, based on your territory and the fees and royalties and all those things that you've got to kind of pay back the franchisor. But then it's impossible to sell a franchise. You know, why would you sell a franchise for a profit when somebody can open up down the street? You know, I was in London last week, which is the capital of the UK. And
I've heard of it.
They have
a bridge, right?
I'm in the Uber. We have Uber now in the UK. It's amazing.
That's civilized. Do they still do they call you governor?
They call me governor. No more horses. No more horses in the UK.
I love when I get in the taxi in the UK and they call you governor. Where to, governor?
Where to, governor? Yeah, where to? So, yeah, so Uber now. I'm in the Uber and I'm flying around London and I must have gone past 50 subways in a 10-minute drive. Yeah. So why would you open a subway when, you know, it's impossible to sell that franchise? Somebody can open up across the street. It's terrible. So, no, I'm always a big fan of go, you know, don't start a company, don't buy a franchise, go and buy an existing business that's not franchised, that somebody else has built and no longer wants to own. And that's the key, no longer wants to own.
Yeah. So let me throw an alternative at you. I have a client who is in the mosquito killing business in people's backyards.
Okay.
It costs very little to get started. It costs maybe $30,000, which I think is about 400 million pounds. But it's 30,000 bucks, and you start the business from scratch, literally. You put out flyers. You get customers. They love the product. And he's got about 50 franchisees that have become millionaires.
Okay.
He has a proven track record. And I think that there are occasionally there's an alternative that you can go to. But for the most part, if you're taking a $100,000 flyer or a $200,000 flyer based on a brand, it's a big – you're going to work your ass off. The people in Subway franchises, they work from 10 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And if they're lucky, they get the volume they need. And if they're not, they don't. But there's thousands of them. And there's no territory. It's just bad. With this guy, you get a territory. You get the, you know, you get everything you need, a protected place. And it's a great business. It's a great – it's the Mosquito Authority, if you want to look them up.
Yeah.
You'll find the CEO started out by doing it himself in his own backyard.
Yeah, perfected the process, yeah?
Exactly. And I think that there's a lot to that. The entrepreneurial spirit is still alive. And what you're doing are matching entrepreneurs or getting entrepreneurs involved in a business that they can put their foot on the gas. And let me tell you one personal story. My mom started a school business in her 60s. And it became successful. She did travel agents and paralegals and la-di-da. So she suffered a stroke, unfortunately, and I wanted the school to be accredited. So we go through this whole long process of all your courseware and bullshit. And we took the weeks to put it together. It cost me probably about 50 grand to put the, make the application, all the other crap. And we got turned down. Like, what is it? What are you, crazy? So it turns out that there's a school down the street that's for sale, and it's accredited. So I bought it. Now I'm accredited. I didn't have to go through any shit.
Yeah.
And that's the magic.
Yeah.
You know, you start running. You start off running. And, I mean, it cost me a few dollars to, you know, to get that school. But what was it worth? I got all their business. I had five new courses. And I had my school was accredited. Boom. We just changed the name.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest wake-up call of my business life. Like, yeah. Why the hell are you going to do that? Just think about it logically. What are you supposed to do logically? I'm in London. I'm flying to Warsaw, Poland. It's BEA. And there's a strike. And everyone is rushing the counter to get their information and their flight change. I walked over to the phone booth and called them up on the phone and had the next flight out.
Yeah.
And wherever people are running, I go the opposite way.
Yeah.
Every single time.
So do I.
Yeah. So I'm asking, I want to ask a couple more questions about I now have the diehards on the edge of their seat because they think they can go buy a business. What business should they buy? What's the hot thing that people are actually investing in?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So you've got to look at doing deals, and we call them LBOs. It's a Wall Street term, but
limited
leverage buyout, just buying a business.
Leverage buyout.
Yeah. So to do an LBO, you've got to look at it as a triad. There are three boxes you've got to tick to do the perfect LBO. So the first one is you've got to do a deal. You've got to buy a business that will resonate with you in some way and is going to serve you. So if it's your first business, you want to buy something that lights you up, something that you're passionate about, and something ideally that you've got some sector expertise. So if you've worked all your life in the manufacturing sector, working for a larger entity, go buy a smaller manufacturing business. Don't go and buy a restaurant or a boutique store or an online software business. Go buy something that you know you understand. You've got a network that you can deploy and you're passionate about it. And that allows you to do something that's really important, and it's build rapport. So one of the keys to what we do is building rapport with sellers and building rapport with financiers. And if you don't know the space and you're not passionate about the space, it's really hard to kind of engage proactively with those people. If you own a business already, then your why is going to be very different, Jeffrey. So your why is going to be, what business can I buy that's going to move my needle? So if you've got a $1 million business and it's took you 5 years to build it, and it might take you another 3 years to get it to 2 million, if you go and buy another $1 million business that's complementary to what you've already got, you can double the size of your business in 90 days or less. And the analogy would be, for example, if you own a software company and you go and buy an IT services company, you can sell the software to the IT services customers and vice versa. You bring those two businesses together, you can take out lots of kind of duplicate costs. So it's a 1 + 1 = 3 on the revenue side and a 1 + 1 = 5 on the cash flow side.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. Diehards, yeah. Listen closely. He's recommending, this is a brilliant advice from Carl Allen. If you don't love it, don't even start. Because you're in a situation where you're going to struggle with something that you don't really know about. If you love it, you already know about it. And that will lead you, you'll go to work every day and be happy that you're in and doing something that you love to start out with. And that's the passion to succeed is the unspoken difference between success and failure. And your job is to find something that you love. This I'm going to challenge you that if you're listening to this episode today, I want you to forward it to every single person that you know who's an entrepreneur, every single one of them, so they can understand how they can grow their business through the love of their business. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, honestly, that is such a great point, Jeffrey. I remember watching the Steve Jobs Harvard, yep. Or Stanford, I can't remember, opening address where he said, you've only got one life. Do something that lights you up. Do something that you love. Do something that moves you. Then you'll have the strength of character to follow through when times get tough. So buying a business that's going to serve you in some way, either as your first business or as a bolt-on acquisition, is kind of the first point of the three. The second point is you need to look for what I call a highly motivated seller. So I have a saying that the best deals are where you can buy a good business from a distressed seller, not the other way around. If you go to most business broker sites, you find lots of good owners of distressed businesses. You don't want to buy those. You're just buying a headache. So if you buy a good business that's making money and is growing, you can buy that business in a lot of cases from somebody that's highly motivated to get out. In the US today, there's 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day, according to the Wall Street Journal. 19% of them own a small business and they have no exit strategy. Their son or daughter that they hoped would take it on has gone off to college to be a dentist or a banker, perish the thought, and nobody to take the business on. They don't know how to sell it. So, and they want to retire. They could be sick. They could be dying in some cases. They're burnt out, exhausted, frustrated. Or you could have an entrepreneur that's built a business, an online business, and they just got bored. And they want to move on to something different. So finding a highly motivated seller is really, really important. And also it's finding a seller that values their legacy and their brand and their business and their employees more than receiving cold, hard cash. About 79% of the sellers that I interact with don't value money from a deal as much as some of those other things. They want their employees taken care of. They don't want a big competitor to come in and gobble up the business and destroy it, relocate it, rip it apart, asset strip it, all those kind of horrible things that they do. So motivated sellers is kind of the second point of the triad. The third point to do an LBO is you need a good business. You can't buy a business that's in trouble. You could buy it for a dollar and you could do those deals all day long, but then you've inherited a headache. You've got to go in and fix it. And I'd rather buy a good business that's making money, that's got a good management team, because then you don't have to worry about the short term. You can plan for the long term, which is building the business, grooming it, and then selling it for that big 7 or 8 figure payday. So the third point of the perfect deal is the numbers. So it's understanding that the business has to have some assets and it also has to have some cash flow. And then that gives you leverage. That gives you leverage over buying that business, whether you're doing an SBA 7(a) loan, which is the trillion-dollar rocket fuel that's going to fuel corporate M&A in the US for the next 25 years, or you go and you talk to angel investors, or you used traditional financing, you know, you finance the assets on the balance sheet to raise some capital to make a closing payment, and then you pay the rest of the money to the seller over time.
So here's the deal, diehards. If you've ever read the story of Ulysses, and he is on the mast of a ship, and they tie him to the big mast so he can hear the sirens playing. And the sirens sweetly singing from Eric Clapton will lure you to the rocks where you will crash and die. So if you're looking at a business and it's in the shitter, but the price is great, and you think to yourself, I can fix this. I have the expertise. I can do this. There's a why as to that business is in the shitter. And if you don't understand that why, you're going to crash on the rocks faster than you can imagine. Whatever you believe the cash flow to be or the cash flow need to be, I would triple it. And then you get a realistic picture of what can happen if you hit the rock. And it may even be more than triple, but I can promise you it's at least triple. And so if you're going to buy a business because you think it's a great deal, you better look under the hood, because there may be a piston missing.
Yeah.
Or an accelerator missing. And Carl is giving you amazing advice here about entrepreneurs looking to be independent, because you're a great salesperson and you think, oh, it's time for me to start my own business. What he's saying is buy a business that's making a profit, and buy it from somebody who wants to sell or needs to sell, who is willing to take a little bit of cash and a bootstrap payment over an extended period of time in order to preserve the business and preserve his legacy. Were we in tune there?
Couldn't sum it up better myself, Jeffrey. Thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. If you'd like to buy my How to Buy a Business book, I have it for sale now. But I will tell you that this advice that you're being given right now is amazing. There's got to be some strategies that you learn. I don't want to call them tricks, because they're not really tricks. They're great business decisions that you learned along the way. Is there, besides that formula, which is a brilliant formula, is there something that you haven't told us yet, that someone who's out there looking for a business or a merge should be looking for or look out for?
Yeah, so I could talk all day with kind of tips and strategies and ideas. So I'll give you three quick ideas. So Okay. The first one that I would do is, if you're out there looking for a business, is don't think that business brokers have all the best deals. They don't. So business brokers are designed to sell businesses to other businesses. They're not designed to sell businesses to individuals like ourselves. So the best deals that you can find will typically come through your network, either your direct network or through social media. So I'll give you an example. 80% of all small business owners that are looking to sell their business today in the US and in Europe, 80% don't list through a business broker. One, because they have a terrible track record, they charge big upfront fees.
Yeah.
And they're just very difficult to kind of deal with.
They want 30% of the purchase price, all kinds of goofy things.
Absolutely. So what most small business owners do is they talk to their CPA, they talk to their lawyer, they talk to their bank, and they talk to their wealth manager. So if you're networking with those four intermediaries in your local town, or there's experts within particular sectors, you're going to get incredible deal flow coming from those individuals. And the number one strategy that we use, we share with all of our entrepreneurs that we're mentoring right now, is to leverage social media, particularly LinkedIn. So if you have a LinkedIn profile, if you're working in a job, then it's probably not advisable, because then everybody will know you're looking for a business.
Yeah. But,
you know, just leveraging social media and going out there and joining the groups of particular businesses or industries or geographic locations, you can get some incredible deal flow. So deal flow is kind of the kind of secret sauce. The more deals you get, the more opportunities you'll have. It's a numbers game at the end of the day. It's buying a business, Jeffrey, is like working in sales. You know, you can't assume that if you go and talk to one prospect, they're going to buy your product or service. You need a funnel. So when you're doing deals, we have a funnel. It's called a deal origination funnel. You put at least 20 deals in there. You vet them all. You work through them all. At least one or two of those are going to work based on that three-point triad. The deal serves you. It's got a highly motivated seller, and it's got a financial profile that's going to support this type of bootstrapped LBO type deal. The second piece of advice I would give anybody that's looking to buy a business or kind of working business in general is read. So I read at least 2 books every single week. I'm always reading. I'm always learning because for me, it's the only way I'm going to grow. I'm studying practical psychology. I'm studying sales and marketing and operations and finance. And I've been reading for 25 years. I'm constantly reading. I never, ever read novels because they're not going to add any value to my life. I'm only going to read books, you know, where I can learn something. Autobiographies are great books to read. You know, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, because success leaves clues. And if you're reading people's stories, you can model the things that they've done well and shortcut all the pain and suffering that they've gone through. The best book that I've read in the last 6 months is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the guy that built Nike. And what he had to go through in those first few years, the determination and the pain and the suffering and the absolute, you know, so resolute and so passionate in getting this business started, you know, nothing was going to stop him. And just reading that book is so, you know, so inspirational. And the third point that I would make for anybody that wants to do anything in life, but especially when it comes to buying a business, is don't worry about the how at the start. The first thing you've got to do is you've got to worry about the why. You know, why do you want to buy a business? You know, what's the fuel that's going to drive you? It's going to make you keep going. Is it because you want to get out of a 9-to-5? Is it because you own a business already and it's just too painful to keep growing it customer by customer? You might be a real estate investor who's getting burnt up in that marketplace and you want to diversify. You might want other passive streams of income. There could be loads of different whys. And then once you figure out what your why is, and you've got the emotional juice to keep you moving forward, you'll find the way, you'll find the how. Luckily, you know, that's one of my businesses. I coach and mentor entrepreneurs in the kind of how. But it's kind of useless if you don't have that fuel and that energy and that drive, you know, to actually want to do it.
I totally agree.
Same with losing weight. You know, you could join a gym and you can go every day and go through the motions, but unless you've got a real purpose to want to achieve a goal, lose weight, look great, whatever it is, live longer so that you can spend time with your grandkids.
And let me remind you, diehards, your why may be several whys deep.
Yeah.
I want to lose weight. Okay, why do you want to lose weight? Well, I'm getting divorced. Oh. So there's always a secondary or maybe even a thirdary reason why you want to do something. But until you find your real passion, until you go way deep, maybe it's to send your kid to college because you never got to go to college. You have to ask yourself the real questions of why and discover your passion, whether you want to buy a business or you're in sales. There's a passion goes with everything. And you have to have a purpose behind the passion. If you don't have one, you're in trouble. Okay, keep going.
Completely agree. No, I completely agree. And that was my three words of advice. You know, don't just go to brokers for deals. You know, read and learn all the time, study and model successful people. And anything you do in your life, figure out what your why is. What are the deep emotional benefits and reasons that compel you to do, you know, what you're going to do? And I think that's everything in life. You know, everything that we do as human beings comes from emotional decisions that we make in our subconscious mind, which we then back up with rational, you know, logic. You know, why do people buy Ferraris? Is it because they're fast? Is it because they, you know, they do 7,000 RPM? No, it's not. You know, people buy things because of how it makes them feel. And I think that applies to buying businesses as well.
And Ferraris have 2 seats in them, one for the driver, one for the mechanic.
There you go. Yeah. I've never owned one, so I wouldn't know.
but we do have one thing in common. We both own a Tesla.
And yes.
It's It's the next big thing. Every major manufacturer right now is gearing up to sell an electric car in 2020. No one can envision what that's going to look like. But you're going to see television commercials flood the airwaves. You're going to see Facebook ads flood the internet with buy my electric car because it's going to go 230 miles, and then someone's going to go 250 miles, then someone's going to go 300. And the technology will be incredibly exacerbated by the fact that there's competitors. And Elon Musk, who is the Jesus of electric cars, will be historically – he's in the annals already of what he's done and how he's done it. I'm sure that that Mobils and the Exxons of the world hate this guy's guts because he's going to –
Absolutely.
Huh? Yeah.
Especially in the UK, because last time you came to the UK, Jeffrey, but we
seven
pay
bucks
$10 a gallon.
Yeah.
$10 a gallon.
Whoa.
Gasoline.
Yeah. It's crazy. Same in Europe. It's all over the place. It's somewhere between $7 and $10 a gallon. And those days are over. That's why everybody has those little itty bitty cars. And I've been in countries where I've taken a car ride, someone's taken me around. When they come to the top of a hill, they turn their engine off.
Yeah, and to save gas.
Yeah, exactly.
My father used to do that all the time. I was brought up in a very working class, blue collar family in rural Lancashire in England. And my father used to do that. I said to him, you know, Dad, what are you doing? Saving money, son. That's what he used to do.
So I'm going to throw this at you. We need to, unfortunately, end this interview.
No worries.
I'll be in Paris in the summer. I'll figure out a way to get to you, or you figure out a way to get to me.
Yeah, well, let's meet up.
Yeah, we'll do a day or something. Just have a crepe and complain about the French.
Yeah.
Because that's what British people do, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a lifestyle. I learned it from Monty Python.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today.
Mine too, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Where can our diehards find you?
So I put together a free training for your diehards. If they want to learn how to buy a business, the 10 steps, our system that we use, we've put together a free training. It's 90 minutes. It's for grown-ups. It's not for the faint-hearted. There's a lot of work that I have you do on that training. That's at ninjaacquisitions.com/free. So if they go to that link, put in their name and email address, we'll send the training link and they can go through it. And hopefully, if they follow through, can own a business.
We're going to put it in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
I would challenge you, I don't care what line of work you're in, the information that Carl Allen is going to give you will affect you not only mentally, but financially. And I appreciate your time very much. I'll see what happens at the end of March, because you guys are up against the wall right now. I don't want to talk politics, but you need to get your shit together. And I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. It's going to be an interesting few weeks with Brexit, but we'll stay in touch.
Cool. Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe. Rate and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom. Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.